I'm very happy now to welcome Jackie M. She's the Director of Education and Public Programs at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum. And tomorrow at 5:30, she is giving a talk at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Education Annex at 123 Grant Avenue, a free talk called Everything is Japanese Nowadays, Japonisma and the Birth of Modern Art. Welcome.
Oh, great to be here, Mary Charlotte.
Is that how you say it? Japonisme? Japonism?
Well, it's a French word, yeah. So Japonisme.
Japonisme.
But I'm probably saying it with a horrible gringo accent, too. But
not as bad as mine. So what is this? This is a...
Well, let me say, first of all, that this talk is actually part of the Santa Fe Opera Guild's series of talks and presentations that they've been doing all year in this... is called a Beyond Opera Program. So the reason I'm doing the talk and in collaboration with the museum is because this summer opens the festival at the opera. The season opens with Madama Butterfly by Puccini, one of the most beloved operas, as they've been saying on the radio, but also one that really fits into this time period where Europeans and Americans were infatuated and heavily influenced by Japanese culture, Japanese art, and Japanese themes and stories.
And so how did that happen? What happened at that moment where suddenly Europeans got interested in Japan?
Well, although it isn't totally true to say that there was no communication with the West for 200 years because there were Dutch settlers living on one little island in the near Nagasaki that was actually created where any foreigner could live from about the 1600s, 1620s to 1854, there really had been no trade with European countries and America. And it was the beginning of the Meiji era, which opened its ports, and Commodore Perry arrives in 1854, and in this time period, then goods are starting to come into Europe first, and America, and some of the goods that are transportable and influence, in particular the artists, are the Japanese prints. So Europeans actually had seen some prints prior to that time, but for the most part, because there was not an exchange, there really was an embargo on that exchange. As I said, only there were a few Dutch merchants that were able to have the exchange. It was like an explosion of ideas. To put myself in the time period, I have to think about how saturated we are by images these days. Anywhere we turn, from publications to television, our internet, etc. But at that time, you know, to see these strikingly beautiful prints, where you didn't have that much visual, you had a visual world around you, but you had sort of dark Renaissance-oriented kinds of drawings. The difference was dramatic, and the influence on artists also very exciting.
And the aesthetic was so different, because not only did you have these dark, as you say, oil paintings and things like that, but also so much Renaissance perspective, and these are a very flat, totally different look, I would imagine, to people looking at them for the first time.
Yes, exactly. The movement from one-point perspective to multiple points of view, the kind of cropping that we're going to see later that a camera will do, but in fact the Japanese would crop the images oddly and show you multiple scenes at one time. They also, the ornamentation, the fabrics in the kimono, the colors that were used, and the woodblock print colorfulness of those prints, the stories that were told, and also the imagery itself, because you know, the ukiyo-e prints investigated the nightlife, the courtesan, and there were also shunga prints, which are quite erotic prints. So depending on the artist, the influences are different in what they pick up and what they will utilize. Like, I brought you a picture right here.
Ah, yes, I'm holding it up to the microphone, ladies and gentlemen. It's a cross-eyed, looks like a photograph of a cross-eyed man sitting in a very elaborate kimono, cross-legged, with his eyes crossed.
And that is Toulouse-Lautrec, the famous...
That's Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yes.
I wish I could put this on my website. Anyway.
Well, I brought it because I think it reads rather humorous, but it's actually a portrait where he imagines himself to be imitating one of the grimaces that would have been popular in Kabuki theater. And of course, Lautrec, over some of the other impressionists, post-impressionists, was very interested in kind of the nightlife Montmartre. And so he takes that influence from Hook's drawings into his work and dramatically portrays it with the posters that he did of those performers like Jean Avril and also a number of his paintings. And here he kind of embodies it himself. He said that he really liked the Japanese because they were small like him. So, but he's only one of many artists that were influenced. Van Gogh was so influenced that in letters to his brother Theo, he says, you know, everything now in my art is Japanese. And although maybe many people have seen his work and loved it without realizing that,
yeah,
when you start to look comparatively at what he's looking at and how he's taking it, you can actually see the strength of this influence.
And of course, when one culture appropriates another, whether or not there are kind of economic imperialist connotations to the whole thing, the fact is that they saw the surface of it, but it's impossible to know the depth and meaning and metaphors inside of an art of a completely foreign culture when it just hits you suddenly.
That, I think, is part of the fascination when we don't put a sort of political correctness onto this appropriation, which, of course, at the time was all done out of with great enthusiasm. These
right.
prints hit. There were dealers in Paris. There were publications. There were cafes people would go to see the prints and show the prints or show their drawings next to prints. And you know what? There was also a cultural exchange that took place with the coming of the West and the depiction of Westerners in Japanese prints. That's not so much called Japanese, but I think we shouldn't miss the fact that we're talking about an exchange.
It goes both ways.
Yes, exactly. And sometimes the contrast is rather fascinating and interesting to see how they depict the Westerner within what we would call a more typical woodblock print scene. Here's an example from, these are actually considered to be Dutch persons who, as I said, the Dutch ports stayed open. There was an island called Deshima that was created. It really was just a leveled rock or a little mountain or mound in near Nagasaki, and they didn't have access to the mainland. So the only people who could really come over and service or be part of their culture that were Japanese were actually the courtesans who would come. And there are stories that go back in terms of these relationships, which very much fit into the story of Chuchu-san and Madama Butterfly. It's kind of taken from that. So it's not only the visual arts. Certainly a number of the stories of the Japanese lifestyle influences modern writers and fascinates them. But my talk is really going to focus on what was happening in the visual arts at the time that really is a hallmark of the change into what we would call modern painting and modern art.
And all of this with images can be experienced by you, dear listener, tomorrow, Tuesday the 4th of May at 5:30 at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum Education Annex in Santa Fe at 123 Grant Avenue. It's free to Georgia O'Keeffe Museum members. There's a charge for the general public. Jackie M. is Director of Education and Public Programs at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum.
And also free to any members of the guilds of the Santa Fe Opera.
That's right, the Santa Fe Opera Guilds as well. Jackie, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it was my pleasure.